Everybody, I'm Phil Parr, and welcome to Blind Like Me. This is the new season, 2006. Actually, this is being recorded on the 30th of December of 2005, which has been a good year for me. I don't know about you, but I've had a wonderful time this year. Every day I wake up, I think, you know, it's got to be great. We're having a great time. Anyway, this would be probably show 102 of a Blind Like Me series, and we start a new year with a fellow from St. Louis, Missouri, named Mark Dew. How are you, sir? Good morning.
Very well, Mr. Phil.
Well, good to have you with us. You say you went and listened to several shows, huh?
Yes, I did. Well, probably about 15 of them since yesterday afternoon.
Man, you've been a busy guy, because I just called you, I guess it was 2 o'clock yesterday, and and talk to you a few minutes. You joined the list of the blind handyman list and listed all the things you do. And I thought, man, this guy, I've got to talk to this guy because you are a keyboard player and entertainer by night. Is that, and that's right, that you play four nights a week?
Yes, I play Wednesday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday at a little lounge up here in St. Louis called the Hideaway Lounge.
And you've been there for 8 years.
18 years.
Good heavens. 18 years at the same... Most clubs don't last that long. Don't stay open.
They'd be lucky if it lasts 18 minutes.
No, they are. You know, is it the same people still own it that started out with you?
Actually, the lady who owned it, she owned two clubs up here in St. Louis. And I started working for her in 1985 at the first location. It was called Claudius Lounge. And she owned that one and the Hideaway both. In September of 87, I wound up working for her at the Hideaway on Sunday and Wednesdays, and I was playing at Claudius Lounge on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday.
Okay.
Well, in 94, she sold Claudius Lounge because she was getting up in her years, 70-something years old, and she felt, at that time she felt that two places was a little bit much for her to be handling anymore, so she sold the one, but then she moved me from the Claudius Lounge location up to the Hideaway, at that point in 94, and I wound up with, already had the Wednesday and Sunday, but I wound up with Wednesday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
Now, you probably start out as background music, and as the night progresses, people get more into what you play. Is that pretty well the way it kind of works?
Well, you kind of analyze, or at least you make an attempt to analyze the crowd that you have.
Yes.
Fortunately for me, that I've been here for so long, I have so much repeating customers.
Yeah.
At any one given night, I probably know personally real well, probably 15 to 20 of our customers.
That are there already.
And maybe the rest of them will be people that just happen to be driving by, or a new customer might pop in, some of that nature.
Mm-hmm.
So I try to analyze the kind of crowd and mood in that they may be in. There are times where we'll get some older people, some of the older fellas that really in that country music, and man, we'll do some of that old Hank stuff and some of that old country stuff. And there might be other nights where we'll get a couple tables of young people in their 20s and earlys and 30s, that maybe get into a different type of music, I may have to make a change and switch off into.
So you kind of try to gauge the crowd when you sit down, listen.
Try to make an assessment, see what's going on, what's best for tonight.
Listen to voices around the room.
And a response to the song, the music that I'm playing. Mm-hmm. If I don't have really a lot of regulars in there, and if I start up with a good old standard song, something like Country Roads, for example, and maybe another country song from the 70s, but it doesn't seem to be doing very well. I might kick in and do a Sinatra tune.
Yeah, just to see.
To see what kind of effect it's going to have on the crowd. If I do Summer Wind and it doesn't seem to do much, I might say, well, let's try maybe an old Roy Orbison song like Pretty Woman and see what that does. You know, try to get a feel of what's going on around you and then go from there.
I always said, I worked when in my 40s, I worked a little restaurant for 3.5 years here in town. I said there is people that don't know the terrifying feeling of walking into a room where 20 people that you don't know are sitting eating supper and taking a guitar and sitting down and singing a song. There is no more terror. Once you get through the first song, everything's fine. But that first one used to kill me walking back there. And
yeah, you know... years ago, that was somewhat of a problem for me.
Yeah.
I do a lot of side work, too, a lot of side jobs, you know, wedding receptions, private parties.
Yeah.
The place where I work's really wonderful because, I work there 4 nights a week, but I have an agreement with the owner of the places. But if I get a good, solid, you know, a good side job, you know, weddings and private parties pay really good money.
Oh, much, much better than just
much
a regular
better
job,
than yeah. what I get at the club.
Yeah.
We're talking maybe 4 times the amount, which is good for me, but
sure.
I have an agreement. When I get a job like that, all I got to do is give them a week notice that I'm going to be off that day, and we'll get somebody else to fill my spot while I'm gone, while I'm doing a side job, which is kind of nice.
Which is really nice. Let me just ask you this. Do you always know when you go into your club job and you turn your equipment on and you hit a few notes to make sure everything's working, you turn your mic on and tap on it with your finger, and you know that everything is set and everything's working, you look at your knobs and everything looks good, do you always usually have a first song in mind?
No. It doesn't really, until I get everything turned on and I sit down and then I put my hands on the keys, and I say, oh, well, what are we going to do? Then something just pops in there, and we'll start off with something.
Do you keep any sort of record of what you did last? I mean, do you mentally understand what you did, the songs you did last Wednesday, and you won't do them again tonight?
No, that's not true.
That's not true.
Now, I usually will not repeat a song in the same day.
Uh-huh.
But especially if you're getting some of the more current material. You do it Wednesday and you make in that following Friday. If it's a current hit song, you know, you do it again.
Yeah. Yeah. But unless somebody tips you and then you do it all you.
Hey, you know, somebody tips me enough, I'll play it all night long. You know,
my standard line was all the money that you put in my tip jar tonight goes to help feed hungry blind people right here in town. And it worked real well. You can have that. You might try that. It's an interesting way to make a living. It's good for blind people. It's been really good for you, hasn't it? You've been able to.
I've been able to raise my family on it.
Yeah.
Of course, in my early years, I was working. Back in 1974, I actually started playing music. I took a friend of mine that went to school. He's about 8 years ahead of me.
Uh-huh.
Called me when I was about. 18. Actually, I was still 17 at the time, and he had this job offer that he couldn't take, and wanted to know if I wanted it. Well, you know, I'm still a senior in high school.
Yeah.
I'm not ready to go to work yet.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, "Well, you know," he said, "it's just be Friday and Saturday night," and he says, "doing piano ball work." And I said, "Well, I'm not that good, you know." He said, "Well, I think you can do it," and I hung up, and I was telling my mother about it. She said, "Well, maybe I'll take a chance." And I said, "I can't. I'm not good enough to do that yet." Well, they rode me for 3 days about taking this job, and finally they talked me into it, and I took it. And this friend of mine that got me this job, his name is Bill Benson. He plays out at the Cheshire here in St. Louis, a place called the Fox and the Hound Lounge. That's a gentleman I told you about the other day. He's been there 33 years. He's totally blind.
33 years. It's just 33 amazing.
33 years he's played the same place. Blind fella. And really, as a matter of fact, Phil, you might find this. Your voice and Bill Vincent's voice is almost identical.
Well, you know, I'll just have to call him and interview him and see what see if they can tell. But now, how old is this Bill Benson fellow?
He's 60.
Yeah, so
I would say he's a little bit older. He's more than 8 years old. I think he's around 62, 63, something.
So this
like that.
This has been his life's practically
career. This has been
career.
His life's work.
What a thought! I do need to get
He's played there six nights a week for many, 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 many years.
I do need to get his phone number.
He's cut back on the days in the last couple of years. I think he's down to 3 days now.
Yeah.
Because he says he needs to back off a little bit. He's getting up there in the years and that, you know.
Yeah. Well, let's get back into your childhood when you were born, I think you said, in 1952.
52.
And so in about 57, they had to decide to send you somewhere to school. What did they send you to? The Missouri School for the
Blind? The Missouri School for the Blind. I was born with sight. I lost the first eye at age 3 and the second one at age 5. So,
wow.
And I, from 5 to about 12, I could see light. You know, colors of light. I know what red is, green is, that sort of thing.
That's good, yeah.
But since age 12, that's all deteriorated,
that's gone,
too.
Yeah.
So.
But you had sight when you were a little
when
child.
When I was an infant, I had sight.
It's amazing. So and that helps, I think, a lot when you've been determining colors and things and shapes of things. I think that's good. You know, there could be some argument about that. But what caused your eye problems? Anybody know?
Mine is what they call weak retinas, detached retinas, which by today's standard, you go in the hospital, operate, you go home and go back to work the next day.
Yeah.
You know, so you could say I was probably born about 15 years, 20 years too early.
Now they would have fixed that.
Exactly.
But then they didn't know, didn't have any idea, and so you know, consequently you lost your eyesight, your eyes because of that.
Too many tears in the retina, deterioration of the retina, and repairing the retinas for a failure.
Yeah.
There's nothing they could do at that time.
Well, there's no sense in worrying about it. If there's nothing they can do about it, you are, and you seem to have dealt with it quite well.
I had my mother for the most practical purposes was a single parent for the most part.
Uh-huh.
And there was four other children besides myself, and I was the oldest.
Uh-huh.
And I took on a little bit of responsibility, probably at a younger age than what you would expect of a child to take on.
Uh-huh.
My mother always had faith in me, you know. If I were to drop a quarter on the floor, I'd get down there and feel it and find, you know, feel around and find it.
That's good.
You know, instead of her running over and grabbing and, you know, picking it up for me, which some people think that's kind of mean, but I think that's the correct way to go myself.
It's the best way to go to make that child, because your mother won't always be around.
That's absolutely true.
Pick up quarters or put your dirty underwear in the clothes hamper or wash your clothes or what.
But I did manage to get in some trouble, though. I mean, you know.
Like what? Tell us.
I was about 8 years old, I remember. I always like to find out why these things work, man.
Uh-huh.
You know, radios, TVs, you know, mixers, motors.
Yes,
I want to know what those are. I mean, I got where I take these things apart. And I remember when I was about 8 years old, my mother had a 23-inch console, black and white TV that I can't remember exactly where she was that day, if she was next door at the neighbors or upstairs doing ironing or what the deal was, but I happened to notice that the back of this TV, you could pull the back of this TV off, you know.
Uh-huh.
Well, I pulled the back of these, and I found these little things in there, and I found out, you know, they were called tubes.
Uh-huh. Yes.
Well, I said, well, these things are kind of neat, and I realized you can take these things out. Well, you know, I took them all out. We're talking about maybe about 18, 20 tubes in this television set.
Oh, and they go back in a certain order.
And I realized later I couldn't figure out where they went to put them back. That was my first mischief thing.
Well, and they were probably miniature tubes, and the pins on the bottoms were very easy to bend.
They were mostly the 9-pin and the 7-pin type tubes.
Yeah.
You know. But I got them all out, and I couldn't put them back in.
So did somebody come and do that for you?
She had to call a technician out to put them back in. But she didn't know how to do it, you know.
Yeah, that inquisitive blind kid.
Oh, yeah.
Taking
these radios apart. By the time I was 12, I was having neighbors and people giving me this stuff.
To take apart, yeah.
Yeah, the TVs and radio. And I was fixing them, you know.
Yeah.
These old, you remember these old 5-2 radios, the 5-old C5 and the 35W4 tubes. And
35Z5 rectifier.
Yeah. You know, they, sure. So I get people to just give me this stuff. And I have boxes of radios and, you know, and TVs and stuff. I remember, I guess I was about 12. I took a, somebody had given me a 23-inch color TV.
Uh-huh.
That the pitch tube was out on it, and it was probably about 6 months later, somebody gave me another color TV. It didn't work anymore. They had a 19-inch tube in it. I took this 19-inch tube out of this one set and put it in this 23-inch television, and it worked.
You got it working.
Got it working.
See, that's amazing. So you,
in fact, my mother used that TV for two years after that, but you can think there's an inch clearance, about an inch and a half clearance all around the picture tube in front, where you can actually stick your fingers in between the tube and the case of the cabinet.
But it worked.
But it worked.
It came on. You heard that noise when you pulled the lever that turned it on. You heard that little little noise the picture tube makes as it warms up, it gets hot. So you memorized how to put the wires on correctly.
Exactly.
Now you did that without any sighted help.
That's correct.
That's pretty cool, but you had a pinch on for taking things apart.
Yeah, I did. And some of that stuff I didn't do so well and got in trouble for it in my earlier years, but in my teenager years, my mother would even call me, like, at school, so the washing machine's not working anymore. Okay, Mom, I'll be home in a little bit. I get home, and I have to go down and find out what's wrong with the washing machine.
And
it'll
and
come off, or, you know, I needed a timer or some little thing to get it going again, but I kept an old washing machine that we had going for something like 8 years, just patching it up and replacing the part on it now and then, you know. But she always told me, so that stuff in the early years was kind of expensive in a lot of ways, but it paid off for her in the later years, you know.
Well, I've interviewed lots of blind people, and you're not the only one that suffered from that problem of being inquisitive and wanting to know how things worked and wanting to figure things out. That's it's not a common thread, but it's a pretty common thread with lots of blind. And you were very mechanically inclined and always have been.
Yeah. Well, I guess so.
Sure.
I started learning how to play guitar when I was 12.
Mm-hmm.
And I picked up that rather well. As a matter of fact, I quit playing. I started piano playing when I was 5.
Mm-hmm.
And my mother played.
Now, started taking lessons at the school, or just
no,
playing?
No, I tried to take lessons in schools, but I was out doing the teacher. So they quit giving me lessons.
Yeah, that's
so my mother pretty much continued that on.
So she could play.
My mother was a classical pianist, yeah.
So there was a piano at the house.
Yes, there was.
Which helped a whole lot, didn't
that's
it?
True.
Yeah. Guy, you were able to go in and learn and teach yourself, kind of.
That's correct. And then when I was about 12, I got interested in guitar, man. Of course, every young kid in those days, you know, you had to learn how to play guitar. That was the thing to do.
Sure.
And I lost all interest in the piano. I said, I don't want to do that. I want to play guitar, man. You play guitar, man. You got it made.
Yeah, the girls will really like you.
Oh, yeah.
It's about 1964.
Yeah. I didn't touch a piano for 4 years.
All right, Mark, let's take a little break and come back. We want to talk about the Missouri School for the Blind. I don't think we've had anybody at the Missouri School for the Blind. Be back in just a minute with more of our show called Blind Like Me. Hang on. Be right back. Sir?
The thing I like the best about the Blind Handyman List, great place to exchange information and gather ideas on anything to do with being a handyman around the house.
I found out how to fix my garbage disposal on the Handyman List, and it worked.
If you'd like to join the Blind Handyman List, send a blank email to blindhandyman-subscribe@yahoogroups.com. That's blindhandyman-subscribe@yahoogroups.com.
The thing I like about the Blind Handyman List, I'm the moderator, and I can delete you if I want to. so don't get out of line. Stay on topic.
That's Blind Handyman. Subscribe at yahoogroups.com. A trip to Walmart.
I wonder where the pharmacy is. It's somewhere over here. Oh, God, I've got my can caught in something.
Pardon me, sir. I don't know how to tell you this, but the end of your can is stuck in my...
Why bother shopping their big discount stores when you can shop from the comfort of your own home at BlindMySmart.com?
Hi, this is Dale Campbell, president of Blind My Smart. If you can't find what you're looking for today, check back tomorrow. We're adding new products every day.
Blind My Smart, with thousands of products at a completely accessible website. Our address is blindmysmart.com. Again, that's www.blindmysmart.com.
Guest is, let me just get back in here. Our guest is Mark Dew, and from St. Louis, Missouri. That's he's talking at his from his home in St. Louis. By the way, I was born in St. Louis, Missouri.
Is that right?
Yes, I was on Belt Avenue in St. Louis, Missouri.
Is that right?
And we came up there several years ago. I believe there's a radio museum of some kind in St. Louis that we went to visit. I don't remember exactly where it is, but I'm pretty sure this some guy had a big collection of old-time radios that we went and looked at up there. And I, of course, everybody that's a radio nut like me listens occasionally to KMOX. You're familiar with KMOX, aren't
you?
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah, and listen.
Big deal about the Cardinals leaving KMOX, you know.
No, are they?
Oh, yeah.
Well, tell me, what? They're not going
to
be on
KMOX? They're moving to another station called KTRS. Here in St. Louis, so it's 55 on the AM dial.
Yeah.
You know, the Cardinals been with KMOX for, longest I can ever remember.
Why would they leave KMOX?
The St. Louis Cardinals bought half interest in the radio station, KTRS.
Uh-huh. It's 550.
That's 550.
Well, you won't be able to hear them all over the nation, just like you
can. Well, that's been one of the arguments up there with a lot of people.
Yeah, you can hear the Cardinals games if you know, when the sun goes down, you can hear the Cardinals games in Kansas City or Brownsville, Texas.
Yep, that's been one of the arguments up here, Phil.
That's a shame. I hate to see that.
This was KMOX last year.
And they weren't on KMOX last year?
Yes, they were. They just finished up.
So that was it?
That's it.
That was it. Well, I'll be damned. That's history in the making.
It's
changing.
History.
All right, anyway, Missouri School for the Blind, you started there as a child at 5 or 6, and how did you find the school? What did you think?
You know, I really don't know. Well, you know, the school is in St. Louis.
Yes, it is.
So, of course, my mother lived in St. Louis, and I don't know how she found out about the school. There's an organization up here, it's called Delta Gamma Foundation, which their main objective is to help parents with blind children in preschool years. You know, help the parents how to cope with them, what they can do to help the blind child. And I just imagine that they probably pointed her in the right direction.
But she would know that all states have, a school for the blind. Or maybe somebody contacted her. Who knows?
Could be.
But you went there at 5, and they put you in a dormitory just like they did the rest of us, I guess,
I was a weekend student in my grade school years.
So you got to go home on that?
I got to go home on the weekend.
Not every day, but at least on Fridays and come back on Sunday.
That's correct.
That would make the blind school experience much different. That would make it much better because you got to see your brothers and sisters, your siblings, and your mother over the weekend.
Then when I reached seventh grade, they started a county bus service.
Uh-huh.
Which made all students in the city of St. Louis, city itself in St. Louis County, eligible to be bused.
Uh-huh.
So I became a day student at that point.
Then you were a day student. You no longer lived on campus.
No longer lived there.
What a deal.
Unless I decided to stay overnight, which I did many, many times.
Well, yeah, because by then you were into some of the activities of the school that you got interested in. Now, did they taught you Braille as a child, I guess, when you were...
Yes, I started Braille first grade.
Braille in the first grade, taught you grades 1, 2, 2.5, and 3, or whatever it is. I don't remember what they're... What do they have, grade 3 Braille
now?
Well,
it's heavy grade 2, and then grade 3 was pretty much... Grade 3 was a course that you could take, but it was not necessarily a requirement.
All those signs and contractions that you got to got to memorize. All right, what else did they teach you there?
They taught piano. They had a shop class there, which I thought was quite interesting in the later years. Of course, like other blind schools, they had a piano tuning class, which I also took.
You took piano tuning and repair. Yeah.
Yep.
And so they taught you that. They thought blind. Of course, there are blind people who make a living tuning pianos.
Well, you know, I still tune, but I don't try to make money at it. I got a lot of people. I got customers. When I was young, when I first got married, I tried to do a little something with it. But then my music, I was playing music too, and I didn't really care. But it picked up fairly well. I was doing maybe 2 or 3 pianos a month in my early years, but that's somewhat dropped off now. But I still have customers. I still do maybe 5, 6 a year.
Well, you know, now the guy's getting $50 a shot for coming and tuning your piano now.
That's cheap.
You know, is that cheap?
Yep, cheap.
Glenn Nairn, who's a blind...
It's $85, $90 in a regular music store up here.
Is that right?
Yeah, $50 is what I charge. But the regular music store that you call it, you're talking $85, $90 to tune.
That's what Glenn Nairn, who's about 70 years old, and he's a blind fellow, went to school with my brother. He charges $50, and then usually he says, like pianos like I have, usually you need to come back in about 6 months and touch them up a little bit.
All pianos have to be tuned twice a year if you're going to keep them up.
If you're going to keep them up.
If they're going to be played, depending on how hard the player is. Now, when I first started working at the Hideaway, the piano that we have there, we're on our... When I started working at the Hideaway, we had an acoustic piano, and I was tuned that once a month.
Oh, yeah.
To keep it in tune, because we had... there was actually at one time 4 piano players that worked there. There was a piano player 7 days a week. This poor piano was getting played 4 hours a day, 7 days a week.
And so you were having to tune it at least once a month.
Exactly.
Now, this was just an acoustic piano.
Acoustic piano at that time.
My.
In 95, we got rid of that one, got another acoustic piano. It's a Yamaha with a black finish. It has no legs in the front. It's a pretty common studio Yamaha piano. And same thing, 6 to 7 days a week.
Yeah.
Pretty much got, and we had that for 10 years. And we just, this last May, we done away with that, and we now have digital now.
You have keyboards now.
Yep.
2 keyboards now. And it's amazing if you have the right keyboard, how much it sounds like a real piano.
Right. I got the lounge itself owns its own digital piano, but I don't use it. I use my own. I got my own that I take, and because I like mine better.
Yeah. All right. Well, anyway, let's not get away from the blind school. What did you do in high school? Did you play in a band there? Did they have a high school?
They had a high school band. Which I played sax.
Really?
I played sax. Now, I wasn't very crazy about saxophone. I don't know. It just didn't really do much for me. Although I like to hear it played.
Yeah.
But as far as myself playing one, that was not really what I liked.
Man, you're just an all-around musician. Saxophone, piano, guitar. You're just all kinds of. I guess you know. Of course, if you play one instrument, then it makes it much easier to learn another because you already know that if you're singing.
You know the foundations of the basic building blocks of music, which always helps.
I say that if you're singing in E and you think that's too high, you have sense enough if you played piano to know that D would be a step down. Would be and if you haven't played piano, you don't know that sometimes.
And we had a course,
high school
course. Yeah. And I wound up playing a lot of the course the piano for the course itself.
Uh-huh.
Course teacher gave me he put on tape the left hand, right hand, how it's supposed to be played.
Uh-huh.
And he would play it left hand measure two and play the right hand measure two and then play them together. I'd take the tape and work on it and learn it.
And then
I wound up doing a lot of the course, their songs. So when they would take the course, people out for a show,
mm-hmm.
then I would be the one that would play the piano.
Yeah, instead of the teacher.
Instead of the teacher.
Sure. Well, that looked better. They have all blind all blind people playing. And so you took piano tuning, you sang, and you played piano then. You played saxophone, and you did. How were your grades? Did you do fairly well or not?
I did real well in first and second grade, straight A's. Third grade, I just fell apart, man. I don't know what happened to me. I turned to be, at that point, I was turning to be a kind of a mean little devil.
Yeah, it's taking things apart.
A set of things, just being mischief in general, you know.
Yeah.
Fourth and fifth grade were okay. Sixth grade was okay. Seventh grade, I didn't do very well. Eighth grade, I started getting better. Ninth grade, tenth grade, 11th grade, I did fairly decent. Nothing great. I did make the honor roll one time in high school,
which
I was dong all proud of.
Yeah.
But
you graduated.
Actually, I did not.
You didn't.
I did not. I left school in my junior year.
Did that right?
Yes,
after at the end of the 10th grade, you left school.
It was actually in the middle of my junior year.
You decided you could play music and do better.
Well, it wasn't that. The girlfriend at that time that I had, she wanted to get married, and young as I was, and sometimes you make decisions that you ought not be making when you're young like that, and I got married, and I had to get out and start doing something to make some money to support a family.
Well, I know. Was she older than you?
Actually, she was six. She was six months younger than me.
6 months younger than you, but she was ready to get married.
Yeah.
And she had already left school or what?
No, she's still in school too. But she just one of those cases. She wasn't happy at her home, and she wanted to get married. You know.
So both of you quit school and got married.
That's pretty much it.
And I think you said yesterday that she had some sight.
She's a partial. Her vision was like, I think, 20 over 200 in one eye and 20 over 400 in the other.
All right. But you had to go, you had to start making a living for this.
That's true.
For this girl. Women can just do things to you, can't they, huh?
I'm telling you.
Women make a fool out of me, as Ernest Tubb would say, huh?
But there's no alternative, Phil, you know.
No, I have a friend in Washington that's lobbying for a third sex, but I don't think so. I think that's going to happen. Yeah, so you got married and you had to go. Boy, you had to go hustle, because you wanted an apartment of your own. Or
yes,
a place to live where you weren't encumbered by the rules of your parents.
Well, my mother wasn't really over happy about it, but she thought I could do it, and she was willing to kind of let the eagle spread the wings and fly, and it went from there.
Well, it was obvious that you weren't going to go to college and become a math professor. That was
correct. Pretty
obvious. So, I quit the end of the ninth grade. Of course, I don't know whether I quit or they asked me to quit. I think it's kind of a combination. They knew I was going to quit, and so they just said, "Don't come back, Mr. Phil." It was obvious that I wasn't going to be professor of economics or anything. I was going to have to make it tuning pianos or playing music or something. So you got married, you moved out so you could do a little drinking and smoking
the funny thing is I never smoked until I was married.
Uh-huh.
My wife smoked before we were married.
Uh-huh.
But I didn't.
And she
thought after we got married, I got started on it somehow. I don't know how that happened.
She introduced you to the pleasures of cigarettes, did she?
Oh, when we were in high school and stuff, I used to sell some of my albums so I could buy her cigarettes.
Yeah, so you could buy her cigarettes?
Yeah.
Boy, this woman had you, didn't she? This woman had little Mark wrapped around her proverbial finger.
Oh, yeah.
My heavens.
What can you do?
What can you do? Nothing.
Yep.
Nothing you can do. So you quit school. What did you go do to make a living? Play music?
Yeah, just when I first got that little piano job I was telling you about earlier, when I was 17.
Mm-hmm.
And I worked for this guy for about 2 years, playing on Friday and Saturday night at $25 a night.
$50 a week.
$50 a week. And back in 1970, $50 a week, it wasn't the greatest money in the world, but it wasn't bad.
No, especially if you could draw a little from the government.
Yeah, exactly.
Add something to that. A guy could support himself. I worked for a radio station for $90 a week and worked probably 60, 70 hours a week forever. $90 a week and just damn glad to get it. you know, the little radio station down in Texas City. So, $50 a week, and then you probably played some side jobs, probably got some other gigs occasionally.
I didn't do any real side jobs back. I didn't have the equipment. We didn't have these digital panels and keyboards that you can pack up in the car and take with you. No,
we didn't. We didn't have any of that, did we?
You know, if you wasn't playing guitar or saxophone, you know, you couldn't take your keyboard.
Well, we had the Moog synthesizer shortly after that.
And expensive at that.
Yeah, you
compared
remember
compared to today's equipment.
You remember those
base equipment?
Yeah, ARP keyboards, ARPology. Anyway, so you play this Friday and Saturday job, and you and your wife were just happy as you could be.
We had a lot of fun.
And she wasn't working. She didn't work.
She did not work.
So, how long did all this bliss last? How long?
Well, in 73, then I started working at that time. The place was called Technicolor's Film Processing Plant.
Oh,
as a darkroom technician there. So I was doing that during the week and playing music on the weekends.
So then you really had it made. Then the
money was starting to come in.
Well, the money was starting to roll in, wasn't it? Huh?
Yeah. And I did that. I did that for many years. 75. Then I quit playing piano and I went and joined an old boy out in South County, St. Louis. That had a three piece band, and I made the fourth piece. And we had a country band. They were started out, and I wound up running the band. It was my band eventually. And I did that for 11 years, and still was working at the film company. In 1980, I went from this Technicolor Studios film company to Fox Photo. I worked for Fox Photo for 6 years after that.
Yeah, and then by that time, that thing had begun to fold up, hadn't it? The darkroom technician.
86, they pretty much wiped out the darkroom side of it. That's how I lost my job. They went automated machinery.
Yeah, I know several people. Don Shaw and Don Patterson both worked at Fox. And Fox employed a lot of blind people, as a matter of fact. But that darkroom technology, they didn't need you anymore.
That's about what it boiled down to.
Now, your country band, were you the singer and the leader? Were you the front man? Hi, everybody. Good evening. Welcome to
I wound up being the leader because when I first started working there, the bass player was his band. And he was the singer, and, of course, he played bass. And I played piano, and I did some singing, a guitar player. Who I wound up working with for 11 years. He did some singing. Everybody had sung in the band except for the drummer. And 2 years into this thing, the bass player had a heart attack on a Sunday morning and died.
Oh, man.
And, but the lady who owned the place wanted to keep the band there, so I wanted taking over the whole thing.
So y'all hired another bass player and just went on.
We hired another bass player and just went on.
Well, I wish I'd been around. That's what I did, was played bass and sang back then, years ago. So you worked at the same club for a number of years, or what?
We worked there, let's see, from 73 to 1980.
Really?
Yeah, and then we left there, and then we went over, same band, same four guys.
Yeah.
We went over and played another place over in Illinois, right across the river from St. Louis here.
Sure.
Played there for 2.5 years. Then we went from another place from there to another place in Illinois and played there another 2.5 years, two nights a week.
Well, there's a St. Louis, Illinois, isn't there? I mean, there's
what is East St. Louis?
It's called East St. Louis, East St. Louis, Illinois. It's right on the river there.
It's right across the riverfront.
The Big Arch. Yeah.
That's where it's at.
So, you had good success with your little band, didn't you?
We had a lot of fun, too. I just, the guitar player and I were just such good friends, and he do the driving, you know. Pick me up and take me to the jobs and take me home when he's done. But we worked so well together that he knew he could just tell about the way I was playing what I was going to do next. And I could tell exactly the way his chords was panning out what he was going to do next. And I mean, we got where the band was tight.
So
we had it down to the letter.
You knew who was going to fill this chorus, or who was going to do what? Who was going to take the first lead? Or
exactly.
That's good when you have two guys. And didn't you say he passed away also?
He passed away of cancer in 86. And at that time, I just didn't have that feeling anymore to try to get hired out a guitar player.
Yeah.
You know, a drummer, you can somewhat get him pretty much under control with maybe a month or two. But a major instrument like a lead guitar player, it's a little bit different story, you know.
Yeah.
And I just I decided, well, you know, I could probably make a little bit more money if I just go out on my own.
If you went, if you
see what I can come up with, and so I started doing piano ball work again at that time.
And that takes us pretty well.
All the way up to the current.
Up to the current. Now, I'll tell you what let's do. Let's take a break, and we want to talk about your woodworking, and your, I think you said that your wife-to-be has a number of rent houses that you are helping to maintain, and we want to talk about your prowess at that and things that you built and things that you've done with woodwork and other things. Back in just a minute with more of our show called Blind Like Me. Hang on.
Begin to start living our lives. If today were the last of all. If today, yes, were the last of all days, of all days.
Well, the whole point of the Blind Handyman Show is blind people have as many plumbing problems and household repairs to do as sighted people do, and we can't do them exactly the same way sighted people do, so we need some input from other blind people to find out how they do household repairs, and so we formed this, started this Blind Handyman, and we got a list going. And as far as Blind Like Me is concerned, we want to use it as an educational tool. As I remember being a young adult, a young person, and thinking, well, how am I going to, I want a nice house and as kids and a good job, but how am I going to do that? And I had just had no idea. And I think the Blind Like Me show demonstrates the fact that it can be done even if you are blind. That's not a handicap. It can be done.
If you would like to be a guest on either show, or you can suggest someone as a guest, email us at blindhandyman@hotmail.com or blindlikeme@txucom.net.
Well, so far, it's been a labor of love.
Blind Science. Here's a website our crack research team certifies screen reader friendly. Now, with this week's Blind Science, here's Tim Cummings.
Have you ever been dying to buy the latest CD that's out there, or maybe find something that's a little bit harder to find, and you don't want to troll around Amazon.com and get lost in all those links? Well, then you should take a look at CD Connection. CD Connection just sells CDs, and they've got quite a large selection. The site's very accessible. I would give it a screen reader friendliness rating of a 9. I haven't purchased anything through them, but I know a lot of people that have and say their service is very good and that they're very pleased with them. The website again is www.cdconnection.com. I'd give it a screen reader friendliness rating of a 9. For Blind Sites, this is Tim Cummings saying, keep on blind sighting.
If you found a screen reader friendly website you'd like us to mention, send your email to blindlikeme, all one word, at txucom.net. And join us again next time for Blind Sight.
As the Car Talk guys would say, the third half of Blind Like Me, Mark Dew from St. Louis, Mo. St. Louis, Mo, as we're talking to. And the weather's kind of interesting in St. Louis. It gets cold up there in the winter and lots of snow, but it gets really hot in the summer also, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
It's
in fact, our high temperature this year was 103.
My heavens, I don't know if we reached 103.
103 is what it was, the high temperature.
Yeah.
And I don't know about Texas. I've never been to Texas, but you know our humidity up here can get out of control.
Yeah, ours too, because we're close to the Gulf down here. And St. Louis was a major city at one time. St. Louis is a city in decline, is it not?
The city itself is in decline. It has been for many years. Although don't say that to the local politicians up there.
Oh, no, you wouldn't want to say that to them. But St. Louis was a major, has been a major U.S. city for many years. It's the confluence of the Missouri River and the Mississippi, isn't that right? Is that right?
The Missouri River is just a little bit north of downtown.
Uh-huh.
Probably just right, just north edge of the St. Louis County area,
uh-huh.
Just north of the city, where the Missouri runs into
to the Mississippi.
City.
But at one time, when we moved cargo by boat in this country, when we moved things, when the rivers were one of our big modes of moving things across the country, St. Louis was a big deal. It was a big, important port.
Yes, it was.
Because things came down the Missouri, and they could meet up with barges and things at the Mississippi River. But its reason for being there has declined, other than what industry is there. And, of course, famous bar department stores, that's still open? Famous bar?
We still have famous bar.
Really?
We have one here in South County approximately 3 minutes from me.
That's great.
Still there.
That's great.
We still have a Sears, but it used to be called Sears and Roebuck. Now it's just Sears.
Nah, it's just Sears, yeah. And see, 5 years from now, we won't have a Sears if they're doing
yeah,
what they're
yeah.
doing. All right, you had alluded on the list that you do some woodwork. Do you have a little woodwork shop somewhere over there, up there?
Most of mine would be in the carpentry field.
Okay. Like what kind of carpentry?
Building deck, redoing kitchen, putting up cabinets, countertop, putting in sinks, bathrooms, tubs. Running water lines, run electrical lines, putting in breaker boxes.
Uh-huh. So you do a little plumbing and a little electrical.
Put all new pipes in. I can completely replumb a place.
In where? In one of her rent houses?
I've done it in some of her rental houses and in my own.
Yeah, because rent houses, if you can't do some maintenance yourself, aren't
you
worth
got a
damn.
Problem.
You got a problem. I got one right now. I'm too old to do the maintenance. I can't crawl around under the house anymore, and I'm having to hire somebody. So, consequently, I lost money this year on this.
I tell you what, crawling, it's funny that you mention that, because this last winter, she owns this one house over there that the lady called and said she got a busted water line, and the water's coming out in front of the house.
Uh-huh.
So we go over there, and sure enough, there's water coming out in front of the house there, and they got a crawl space underneath there. It's about 2.5 from the – it's a dirt floor.
Oh.
And maybe about a 2.5 foot space between that and the joists.
Okay.
And the water had frozen up and broken underneath there, and of course, we turned the water off at the street. And
yeah.
I told her, I cannot get underneath there now. It's too wet, too cold, too wet. Just can't do it. So it was about 4 or 5 days later, I went back over there and took some plastic clothes and stuff, and I had to crawl underneath there, and I was able to find a break, and it was plastic pipe, and I cut it off, and I put a cutoff valve on it where I can
I got
cut
you.
Off the water.
Yeah.
So we could turn the water back on, at least their commode would work in the kitchen sink. They had cold water, but no hot water, so a hot water line that broke. But them tight places, Phil, I'm telling you, you get underneath there, you just don't know what kind of things are underneath there.
That's
and it don't smell that good to start with. It's cramped spaces, and if you've got any kind of if you're afraid of tight places, you're going to it's not a good thing. It just isn't a good thing to be underneath.
Well,
I managed to do that, and when it got to be warm weather, then I had to get underneath there, and I had to take my hacksaw, my new pipe, and my pipe glue and all this stuff, my tape measure, crawl underneath to try to work to cut this line out and put a new one in there, but I managed to get it done.
Yeah, so you want to holler up under there so the rats will know you're coming.
Yeah.
Yeah, boy, I haven't...
That was the first one for me, you know.
I have this little rent house. A lady was living in it about 5 years ago, and the bathtub wasn't running to suit her. So her boyfriend got under the edge of the house. The bathtub was right there where you could almost take the skirting or the panel off, and you could see the drain. Bathtub wasn't draining to suit him, so this SOB just cut the drain in two with a hacksaw. And so the water from the bathtub was just draining under the house.
Yep.
So it was just like a swamp. I looked at it, but I called somebody. I had that done. Of course, that's $200, and then she finally got her to move. But you know, renters don't have no respect for your property. They don't care.
No, they don't. And they just they break windows, put holes in the walls. burn countertops with cigarettes, rip up the carpet, moving furniture up and down the steps. I mean, it's not theirs. They don't care.
That's right. I never was like that. I rented lots of houses, but I usually left them because I'd go around and do all the little maintenance work, fix all the light switches, and I'd usually left the house in better shape than I.
Well, my wife to be has 32 units over there, and they're all single houses.
Oh my heavens!
And I do the bulk of the maintenance. As a matter of fact, yesterday I just put a new hot water tank in at one house.
Oh, yeah?
It developed a leak in the glass lining at the top of the tank, and it was leaking down inside. You know where the insulation is between the glass tank
sure,
and the metal tank?
Sure, that's unusual.
And it was leaking down in there, and it was leaking down onto the power light, putting the power light out.
Huh.
Well, there's no fixing that.
No, just junk it out and get rid of it.
Exactly.
But
and
that's
I just did that yesterday. Had to pull that tank and put another tank in there.
That's an unusual thing. Usually they rust at the bottom.
Usually they'll rust at the bottom in an area there when the water will spring a leak and just right in over the burner itself or somewhere.
Yeah, but you're going to get maybe 10 years out of a hot water heater, and you might as well replace it because you're not going to get much more. It's going to happen, and they're not a big deal to replace if up above them they have little flex hoses.
Yeah, this one was the easy one. It had the flex copper, tubing on the water lines and the gas line.
And so that wasn't really any problem to put back. Who'd you get? Who lit the pilot light?
I did it.
You did it. Held the button in until
the button down. Stuck my hand in, put my cigarette lighter, and lit it.
Till the thermocouple caught. Held the button down until the thermocouple caught, and there the way you went, right?
The way it went.
It's amazing. That's amazing. A lot of folks wouldn't know that. Well, she's lucky to have you, I'll tell you, because that job would have not only cost her the hot water heater, it would have cost her $150 to get a plumber to come out and do it.
Exactly. I do a lot, the new faucets. I put in carpet in places where carpet had to be replaced. Put in new doors where they kicked in the door. They tore the door up so bad the door had to be replaced.
Yeah.
When I first started going with her about 4 years ago, she had this big, huge box. There was 75 doorknobs, locks.
Uh-huh.
And I said, "What is this?" She said, "Well, these are locks we took up old houses. We don't have keys anymore." And I said, "You mean to tell me that you go and buy new locks and put on?" She said, "When they move out, they don't return the key. We got to take the locks out, put on new ones."
No,
we need to do that.
You take the lock to the hardware store and have it rekeyed.
I do it. I rekey it.
You rekey it yourself.
I rekey it myself. I do. There's two different brands I work with. One's called a Quickset. Quickset. I'm sorry. Quickset and Defiant. There are two brands that I work with, and I can rekey them.
And you can rekey the lock yourself.
Yep.
I need to talk to you about that because I don't do that. But I need to know how.
Let me tell you, the problem with rekeying the locks is that it's hard to explain how it's done. But if you've actually shown how to do it, it's a piece of cake, especially for a blind person.
Because it's mostly feel or what? Because
it's feel when you put the new pins in. See the pins. On the lock, there's like five, six, depending on the brand, there's 5 to 6 pins in a lock.
Uh-huh.
And when you take out those pins and you put the key in, you can stick any key you want in there. And when you put the pins in, these pins have to be level.
Okay.
With the cylinder.
Okay.
It has to be completely level with the cylinder.
Okay.
That makes it, those pins are set for that key. And it's good. The blind person, you can feel that. When you drop these little pins in there, you can feel if that's level or not. If it's too low, you got the wrong pin in there.
Now, because the key actually pushes some pins down and leaves some up, or what?
When the key's out, Phil, there's actually two sets of pins. There's pins in the bottom, in the cylinder, and there's pins in the top.
Okay.
And when you take the key out, the pins in the bottom drop down, and the pins in the top drop in where the key was that keeps the thing locked. Now, the pins in the top are all the same size.
Okay.
It's the pins in the bottom that are different, that matches the cut of the key.
Okay.
And those are the ones you have to get level. Now, it's easier if you have the O key to change, to rekey it. But you don't have to have the O key in order to rekey it. You got to go through a little bit different procedure to get that cylinder out.
Yeah, okay, but you're not trying to grind a new key. You're simply trying to make a key.
You're replacing the key that you have laying around. I could say this because it's I bought all my locks. I got like six locks. I got ones to the garage. I got one to the back door. One to my computer room. One to the front door. And I rekeyed them all to one key. I got one key that fits everything in my house.
Sure, that's the way I do too. That's the way you want it. That way you don't have to worry about what key. My one key fits everything. Every room I have is done by one key. Well, I'll be darned. I've never taken a lock apart. I guess I need to and learn a little about them. Maybe we can have you on in the future, have you on a Blind Handyman show, and we can go into this in depth.
I would be honored to do so.
I'd probably need to talk to you before so I'd know the right questions to ask, you know, because I've never done. You're not grinding keys. You're just making a lock fit a key you already have.
That's correct.
Is what you're doing.
Right.
And so that saved her that expense, didn't it?
Yeah, because it's $14, $15 for a new lock system.
How did you meet this woman? I mean, did she? What a match, you know.
Well, she started coming while I was playing at Hideaway.
All right.
Back around 96, 97, something like that. And I'd known her for 4 years before we actually got together. Her husband had passed away.
Uh huh.
I think it was early 96, he had passed away. And, of course, he was the one that did the bulk of their
maintenance.
At the time that I first met her, Phil, she had 85 houses.
Yeah, but I was going to say, did she know what a handy fellow you were before she started dating you?
No, she didn't.
That just kind of happened. Just kind
she knew
of,
about my music, but before the other stuff, no.
All right. Well, I tell you what, we're just getting close to being out of time. You don't have a CD that you sell or anything, do you?
I don't have one I sell, but I got one I've done some work on that I can send you.
Is that
There's
right?
Some songs that my wife to be, she's singing five songs on it.
Uh-huh.
And I'm doing all the playing, different tracks, and we mixed it down here in the studio. And
I would like to hear that. Do you have a studio of your own?
I got a small studio, nothing real big. But
you do. What do you record on? You record.
I got a 24-track Tascam. It's called a 2488 digital recorder.
Oh, so you've got the Tascam recorder.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you're a lucky man. They still make that one. They don't make the Mackie, and they don't make the they don't make the Tascam. They make the Alesis now, but they don't make the Tascam or the Mackie anymore.
Well, when did they quit making Tascam?
I'm pretty sure they've quit that. I know they quit making Mackie because that's what I have.
See, I've only had this 2488 3 months. It's brand new.
I've got an MDR 2496, Mackie, that I've had 4 years, and they quit making them. I did find out last night how to change the hard drive in them. But anyway, that's a difference. So you got a little studio of your own. We didn't even talk about that, did we? And a board, I guess, a mixing console?
I got a mixing console. It's not real big. Mixing console that I have is 8 channels. Actually, it's 12 channels.
So you have to double up on tracks to...
Well, if I want to get too elaborate. But if I'm going into like the 2488, it's got 24 tracks. It's also got its own... The 2488 also has its own mixing board.
Is that right?